Welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selena Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pavitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship, and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside. Hello and welcome to another Project Love podcast episode. It is Selena here today and I have got such a juicy conversation for you. I had the wonderful Nicola Ray Wickham joining me again on the podcast, this time to talk about finding your voice. So a little bit about Nicola. If you've never come across Nicola before, she is a creative coach and strategist and, as it says on her website, and in her words, is on a mission to help big-hearted, deep-thinking and big-feeling creatives find, use and amplify their voice and make a real wholehearted and positive impact in the world. I've known Nicola for quite a few years now, and I just love being in her presence. I'm so inspired by her. She is the founder of A Life More Inspired, so perhaps that's why. But what I started to notice, and this is what we talk about in the episode, back in April 2020, I really started noticing her speaking to her audience in a new and really powerful way and really speaking to me. And I was so impressed and inspired to see a fellow coach, a fellow businesswoman and entrepreneur really knowing her audience and speaking so directly that you felt like she was just speaking to you. Then the George Floyd murder happened, Black Lives Matter, and I started to see, and I suddenly saw Nicola take on a new role on her platform, talking openly, honestly, in this incredibly powerful and heartfelt way of her lived experience as a Black British woman living in the UK and the racism that she had experienced over the years and the anger and the hurt and the pain. And so I wanted to get her back on to the podcast to talk about her journey and finding her voice in these different ways. And it is, as ever with Nicola, we go deep. It's loving. It is warm, it is deep, it is moving. And I'm really looking forward to you hearing this. We talk about finding your voice as a business owner. We talk about finding your voice as, in her case, as a Black woman in Britain during Black Lives Matter and since then. And we talk about finding your voice as a people pleaser. There are full details on how to find out more about Nicola in the show notes, but you can also go to alifemoreinspired.com or follow her, Nicola Ray Wickham, over on Instagram and, of course, her Dream and Do podcast. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. Nicola and I really found it healing and nourishing, and hope you do too. Lots of love. Enjoy. Nicola Ray Wickham.
Hello.
Thank you. Hello. I always look forward to our conversations because wherever the conversation takes us, we always go somewhere so deep and nourishing.
We do.
Thank you for joining me today on this deliciously sweaty and sticky summer day, which we both love.
Thank you for having me. I love being on your podcast and chatting. Actually, I love chatting to you when we're not recording. So it's an extra treat when we're recording.
So I've been wanting you to come back onto the Project Love podcast for some time to talk about the very juicy topic of finding your voice. Mm. So it was, I think it was around April, May 2020, where something happened to you. And you started appearing on Instagram, writing these posts where I was just like, Nicola, how have you discovered the secrets to my mind and soul? And you're writing, and I remember I kept saying it in posts. I was like, Nicola, what are you doing? How are you speaking so directly to me? And then Black Lives Matter. Mm. And then your voice became even more powerful. And you really stepped into this space of, and you were talking about, I'm here to have my voice heard. And this is new for me in this way, as a Black woman talking now with Black Lives Matter happening. And it was, I was just like, wow. And I really would love to know what your journey has been to step into finding your voice, having the courage to speak your truth. Mm-hmm. And how that, like how it was to be doing that during last year and then with Black Lives Matter and yeah.
Yeah. Well, it feels really lovely to be here with you doing this reflection because I've been so in it. There's been moments where I've looked back and I've reflected, but as a kind of entirety where we are like a year to 18 months on, I've not done that.
Yeah.
So thank you for giving me this opportunity. And what has it been like? It has felt very preordained.
Wow.
Yeah. It felt very... this is the way that it was meant to be and the way it was meant to work out, and things happened in the order that they did. At the time, I didn't know why. Mm. And then as things started to happen, I was like, this is why. So I think I've always been held by the, as uncomfortable as it's been at times, it's kind of like I'm right where I'm meant to be, knee deep in the discomfort, knee deep in the vulnerability hangover, knee deep in the going to press live or record or publish and have that like proper sweaty moment.
Yeah, I bet there are a lot of proper sweaty moments. You talked about them being proper sweaty moments, like as you were sharing, as you were speaking your truth.
Yeah, it was. And also going from somebody, so I think a lot of people see me online and think that, You just build up ideas, right, of people that you see online. Mm. You see highlight reels, you see them as they are now. And so I think people have a perception that I was very confident, which I think I am now, a confident person, or somebody who would use their voice in that way quite easily. Mm. And I was never that person. At all. So it was such a leap for me to step into using my voice in that way. And it's a leap that I don't think that you would necessarily have observed unless you had known me kind of more intimately or had known me before.
I definitely saw the transition from, I always enjoyed following you. I always enjoyed your warmth and the topics you talked about. But I noticed, it was around, for me, it was roughly around April, kind of May time, where you were talking with this sense of a new boldness and a new power to who you were speaking to, your audience, and like calling us in. Mm. Was there some work that you had done around that time that had helped you to really, it really felt like you'd really honed in? First of all, on your like ideal client. And then actually, at the end of that, I think you were teaching people how to do that. I was just like, well, yes, I would like some of this, please.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it coincided with, so I'd had my daughter the year before, April 2019, went back to work pretty quickly and things were going well. I'd kind of really... when I started my business, it was kind of really up and down, as it often can be. Mm. And then when I got pregnant with her, I was just like, right, this is going to work. And I am all in. I am focused. Like all of the stuff that I hadn't been before, I was on it. So I'd had a really good year. And also in that time, I had honed in on who I was talking to. Mm. And I decided it was the big-hearted creatives. And I needed to go on the journey with my entire business to get to that place. And so I had this renewed sense of enthusiasm and excitement and energy for these, I call them deep and big-hearted creatives, but they're the deep thinkers and feelers. I was like, those are my people. Mm. And I know them so well because I am them.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of this like, yes, this is who I'm talking to. And I went all in on saying the things that I know that they needed to hear and really enjoyed that. And also then I was kind of really getting into being a mum of two. You don't have time to mess around.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing, actually, you know, that I think this same thing happened to me when I became a mum, because there is quite often a narrative, you become a mother for the first time or the second time or the third time, and that can kind of knock you off kilter with your business. Mm. But I think you and I both felt that actually it became like a laser. It got us to be laser focused.
Yeah.
You know, on what we were doing.
Absolutely. It was what I needed.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't advocate anyone having a baby
order to give them a kick up the bum and get the laser sharp vision, because it can go either way.
Because you get a kick up the bum, but on a different
bit of a gamble.
Yeah, exactly. But it really gave me this boost of everything that I needed and made me feel really powerful as well, in a way.
Wow.
So now I'm kind of reflecting on it. Part of it was probably coming from that place of, I can do this. And also what it is, so something I say a lot is imperfection for the win, which I have always stood by. But when you've then got two children and you're managing lots of things, I dived into imperfection. And so that was probably why it was coming across with such kind of vigor and boldness, was that I'm putting this stuff out there, knowing it's imperfect, embracing the fact that it's imperfect. And that just almost opened the floodgates as well.
Yeah, because it is that vulnerability that we connect with. And then it doesn't feel over-polished. It feels real. It feels alive. It feels, isn't it funny when you dare to do the thing that before you probably thought would be lead to failure, and actually it kind of leads to things opening up and leads to the success? Because did you then notice that more people started coming away, or the right people started coming your way?
Absolutely. So after I'd had my daughter and went back to work, then that's when my kind of trajectory started going upwards. And then it was again in April 2020 when it really kind of...
There you go.
Was, yeah. And it's that funny thing about time, because we can always say we don't have enough time and it's kind of our most precious commodity alongside our energy. And then when you don't have a lot of time, you have to make some decisions, right? So you can make the decision to just think about how much time you don't have and sit in that, or you just make the most of what you've got.
Yeah.
Which means that you then embrace imperfection, you go with what your heart tells you to do, you just keep showing up anyway. And for me, that was a complete blessing. So there is a way that we can reframe time, and not just in a quite theoretical way of reframing it. We can actually embody it by being like, I've got half hour nap time here.
That's an opportunity.
That's an opportunity. Rather than, I've only got half an hour.
Yes, totally.
I've got half an hour and I'm going to do X with that.
Yeah.
So that's definitely what happened. Yeah.
So it definitely sounds like, you know, having your second child, having that laser focus, having that kind of reframing time, there was a kind of almost like a boldness and a strength that came through and an immediacy. This is either I do or I don't. Like, there's no messing around. Haven't really got time to mess around. Did you also find then came with like, haven't really got time to worry about what people are thinking. I'm just going to put it out there. And
yeah. It did not come into my mind what other people were thinking. And that's probably one of the first times in my life that it's never really come into my mind what other people are thinking. And it was partly because I was so focused on these big-hearted creatives who I know needed what I was putting out there. And again, I didn't have time to think about the people that didn't want to hear it or any judgment I might get. There was not the brain space to accommodate that. It just wasn't there. It was like, I do what I need to do at home and I can serve the people who I feel so passionately about. I have nothing left for anybody else.
Yeah.
And in a sense, I look back on that and now I'm out of that situation. So the children are older, I've got more childcare, and there's a little part of me that wants to bottle, as hard as it was, wants to bottle that. Because now I have got time, and the the doubt will creep in more.
Yes.
Right.
More space, more time for that to creep in. But there wasn't the space for it then.
No.
That's amazing. I love that. So, okay, then the murder of George Floyd. Black Lives Matter. The world is listening. And you used your platform in the most beautiful, powerful way from my experience. What was it like for you?
Well, to preface this, so we were in the pandemic by then. I had zero childcare. So I was, everything we've talked about before was almost like intensified because there was even less time then. And I had done Nova Reid's Courageous Courage.
Yes.
I think I'd done it in the Feb or the March. And I'd done that because I listened to you on her podcast. And I've told you this story before, but it was a rainy day. I was taking the baby out to walk because she'll only sleep when we're walking.
Great.
And I was listening to you on Nova's podcast. And I can't remember exactly what you were talking about or what you said. But I was like, I need to do Courageous Courage. And it had been something that had been kind of floating for me. And I kept saying, it's not the right time. Because it wasn't the right time. Like, I didn't have the time. Mm-hmm. But there was a pull to do it. And I listened to you on the podcast and I was like, and heard the transformation that you'd had and the realizations. And although our positions are different.
Yeah.
And our outlooks were different. There was something that really resonated with me. And I was like, I need to do it. So I stood in the park in the rain and booked in on it. So I have to add that in because it was a big part of me being the way that I was come June 2020. I think if I hadn't have done that course, then I probably would have sat on my hands a bit more.
I love that story so much. That story blows me away every time. Because you were listening to a white woman talking about her healing journey around shining a light on her own inner racism. And I was obviously that white woman talking, finding my voice for the first time being able to talk about that. Because prior to doing Nova's course, there is no way that I could have had a conversation about racism, let alone owning the fact that I have racist programming within me. And the fact that that conversation inspired a Black woman to then want to go on a course also with Nova for a healing journey from like the other side of that coin is, it's so moving and powerful.
It is. When you say it like that, it really is. And I think the key parts of it that I got was that it allowed you to go to a space of openness that you hadn't have done before. And it was part of your healing journey.
Yeah.
And that's what it did for me as well. It just kind of unlocked some uncomfortableness that I had been able to bypass, to be honest, and bypass for survival. And there was a part of me that knew that within, I'd done so much work on myself over the years, but not there, not in terms of the impact of racism, not in terms of my proximity to whiteness, being a light-skinned Black woman. Mm-hmm. And what it started to do was just open me up. So that I knew that the rest of the work lied there and I was avoiding it.
Yes.
I was avoiding it. And I think that hearing also, it was really comforting to hear that you, to a certain extent, had avoided it.
Oh, yeah.
And then you kind of dived in and it's like, well, yeah, like it's...
I had avoided it. I wondered, but then it began calling to me until I could avoid it no longer. Mm. And it was like, it was just there. Constantly, this is the work you've got to do. This is the work. It's not, I'm not going anywhere. I'm just going to get louder and it's going to get more and more uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And then I found Nova and I found her work.
Yeah, it was similar. I knew that that's it was there. And it was really there. So it meant that by the time June came and everything happened, my voice had been, it'd been freed up.
Mm.
Something had been unlocked. And so that when I saw what was happening, previous Nicola would have been able to sit on her hands, bypass the feelings, have conversations in the comfort of my home and my WhatsApp DMs.
Yeah.
With friends. But that was no longer enough. That was no longer comfortable. And I could not sit on my hands any longer. So there were so many times when I did a run of live videos. It was like every night for a week.
I remember.
Yeah. And I never go live on Instagram. Like, that's not a thing that I usually do. And it would be funny because I would have all my clients had been moved to the evening. So often I wasn't finishing until like 9:30, 10 o'clock. And what in my head, I was like, right, I've got stuff to say.
Yeah.
But before I knew it, I was live.
It's almost like it took over.
It took over. And this is from someone. So I've got a marketing background. That's what I studied sociology and then I was trained in marketing, corporate career for just under 20 years. And those of us in that communications marketing field, our job is to manage perception. So we are very good at managing perception. We're very good at thinking about our actions and kind of the visuals and the optics. And that's what we're trained to do. And I've definitely taken that into my business and I tried to take the better parts of it and always kind of be authentic and real with it. But absolutely, like, it's in me to think about perception. And then it got to that week and it was like, that all went out, like all of the old stuff just went out the window.
How did it feel to be doing that, to be speaking your truth, and in particular speaking to a white people in your audience about your, because a lot of the time it was that, wasn't it, about your lived experience, and it was just like, I need you to hear this, this is going to be uncomfortable, don't turn away kind of stuff. And Was that the first time you'd spoken to a white people in your audience about, or any white person, truly, honestly, about your lived experience as a black woman? Was it one of the first times?
It was one of the first times.
Yeah.
So in my content, I'd started to kind of allude to things.
Yeah.
And I would always do it through the lens of my daughters.
Right.
Right. So it would always be bringing up, well, at that time, yeah, one daughter and then two, it would be bringing them up, raising them and kind of seeing the world through their eyes. I'd never done it from my own perspective.
Mm.
It was literally like the conversations in the WhatsApp moved to Instagram.
Yeah.
That's what I did. Like the things that I would have discussed there and what I was discussing, I was like, right, no, this needs to go to the people that actually need to hear it.
Yes.
And it felt, how did it feel? It felt a mixture of hugely vulnerable. I felt hugely vulnerable and then also really angry.
Yeah.
A lot of it came from an angry place. Mm. So there was a lot of rage. And it also felt really empowering in the sense of, like, finally, I can just say it.
Mm.
Yeah. And that kind of felt like a long time coming, because growing up in a Caribbean household, it was always like the way that you can talk and act at home is not how you can outside in the outside world. So there's always been like these two sides of me, it felt like. And it was the first time in my business, and now I've continued to like really lean into that. But it was the first time in my business where it was like, no, you know what? They're one in the same now. Yeah. I don't have to put my outside voice on. my outside face on.
Yeah. Were there any ways that it impacted on you going forward in ways that you hadn't expected? That sort of liberation, no longer having to put different masks on.
Yeah, I think it's just continued quite naturally.
Has it?
Yeah. So it was a switch that was flipped, and since then it's remained that way. Even if I'm not talking about everything that happens, like I'm not that person. Like throughout it, I would always caveat it with, I'm not an anti-racism educator. I'm not an activist. Like that's not what I'm trying to be. But I feel freer to talk about things as I see it now, and not think, am I alienating anyone?
Yeah. And not worrying so much if you're making people uncomfortable.
That's it. I spent all of this time putting white comfort above my own. And June 2020 was like, that's when I stopped.
And has that, and you feel like you've, that's continued?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There must, I mean, I'm going to hazard a guess here that you're something of a, let's call it recovering people pleaser. Because we all are the big-hearted creatives. I mean, it kind of, it goes hand in hand. You can't,
absolutely.
You know, and particularly if you're a woman, and particularly, I'd imagine, if you're a Black woman, you know, and it's that of having to swallow your truth and your lived experience because either people will be uncomfortable or they won't get it or they'll deny it. I'm so interested with the people pleasing, because for me, that thing of like finding your voice, I'm working through that now of particularly with people I'm closest to, suddenly realizing there's a whole layer where I shut up, put up, don't say anything because I'm afraid. Really, really, really afraid to make people angry. And so the choice for such a long time was to just best just say nothing, just let this one pass. It's better, just it'll be easier.
It'll be
more harmonious.
Yes.
If we just, does it really matter, you know, in the grand scheme of things? But then after 40, just a little over 40 years, Nicola, as we are, it's like you realise how much you've been swallowing down and what that does to you and what that does to your power.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to people who, for whatever reason, have realised how much they have had to keep their full selves hidden away, like particularly when they go to work or amongst their friends, certain friends, you know, having to like keep that part hidden? Would you recommend that people start, from your experience, has it been a positive thing to have kind of come out and spoken your truth in that way and also in such a public way on your Instagram platform?
Yeah, it's been really liberating for me to do it. I don't advocate that everybody has to go on their socials and do it in that kind of way. In a sense, there was a, I wasn't the only one, right?
Yes.
So it was part of a whole cultural shift that we all experienced. So in that sense, it wasn't as lonely as it could be as a people pleaser to speak out like that. But what I would say is that whether it's about kind of something more public or something more personal, like a group of friends or in a workplace, one of the things that I really held on to was my energy. So I've always talked about protecting my energy and being discerning about my energy and thinking of it as almost like a currency or this precious thing that we have. So I'd always talked about that. And then I experienced another facet to it. And I was like, okay, I can use this even more. So what I would say to those people is to really monitor how much, what is energizing you, what is depleting you, who is energizing you and who is depleting you. It takes so much energy to swallow all the time. Like, I hadn't realized, like, I was an adept people pleaser, editor, assimilator. Like, I was a masterful assimilator.
Yeah.
Especially coming from a marketing background, on top of everything else, like, I was the ultimate chameleon. And I was good at it. I needed to be good at it for my job. I was good at it in all of my life. And I was exhausted.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize, because I thought that that was just a normal level of...
You've totally normalized it. And yeah. It's also becomes you, becomes part of your identity. So yeah. It's hard to even realize that
I didn't know there was doing it. Exactly. I didn't realize that there was a different way to feel. But once I tuned into the fact that I know that these things are making me exhausted, that as hard as it can be to speak your truth and to choose your own comfort over other people's, ultimately, it uses up more of your energy.
Mm.
So that's kind of, there's some decisions that need to be made before you walk into it. And that was one of them that really helped me. So as uncomfortable as it might be to sit in that seat of truth and authenticity, the energy expelled in not. Is that, and I can feel it already.
Yeah.
If there's something at home that I don't say, I can feel it.
Yeah. Well, you can't swallow it anymore. And do you think that partly comes from, because now you're now aware, you become more and more aware of the cost and that you're doing it, then suddenly it becomes, you just can't. You just...
And some of it is conscious as well. There's a lot of conscious, whether code switching or editing and filtering. And even then, it is then looking at almost the opportunity cost of it and deciding. But I would say to anybody, like, go gentle.
Yes.
Go really gentle. Like, you don't have to choose, like, the most challenging person or the most challenging thing to be your starting point, right?
It's hard. Like, speaking your truth as it stands is hard.
Yeah.
So it takes courage. It takes vulnerability. It's a beautifully brave thing to do.
It is.
So, yeah, you don't need to add extra challenge.
No, it's go. So but it could be that you're out with a group of friends and you're deciding where to eat, and usually you're the one who goes, oh, I don't mind. But really, you want Italian. Like, right? That might be a time to practice.
And yeah.
Share that with anybody. Like, you don't need to be like, oh my gosh, I've actually said what I want and haven't gone with like the majority, or I've actually, but you know, in yourself, you're giving yourself a high five, because before you would have gone like, oh, I'll have anything. And then you end up having Thai, and you had Thai last night. You don't really want Thai again. You say, actually, I'd really like Italian.
Yeah.
So starting off small and gentle, and then also, like, at that time in June, where I was talking to white women and being like, this is the truth of the matter and this is what has been going on, this is how it makes me feel, I was also saying to black women, don't feel like you have to.
I do remember you saying that.
Yeah. Don't feel like you had, like, it's now your duty or your responsibility, because you, I know you've now had this influx of followers and there's more people watching you. You choose yourself. And if you feel called to, then speak and hit me up in the DMs if you need support, because I'm here. But at the same time, it's like, it's time for us to do what's best for us.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, exactly. And follow your heart and do it in the way that feels right to you.
Yeah. And making sure that you're doing it safely as well. So it's having a good support system is helpful, but also, yeah, doing it safely. Like, someone might have an opportunity for you to go on their platform, but you know it's going to be full of kind of naysayers who are going to be questioning your experience. You don't have to do that. Like, you get to be discerning about who hears your voice, where you use it.
Oh, Nicola, that is so good. Yeah. And making that choice, because there are plenty of people out there who do want people to stay small and to keep quiet, and that they will say horrible stuff, you know, to come back when we when we come out, we step into our power. Mm. And so it's being discerning about where
That is the word, is discernment. It's you're discerning about everything and knowing that you don't have to do anything. And what was really lovely at that time is that, I mean, I didn't get any negative comments, but if there was anybody who was commenting, kind of questioning or even not really understanding, there were other people who would, other white women who were in the work.
Yeah, who were coming.
Who would just go in. Like, I just made it, there's, like, when I look back at that time, there were posts upon posts with, and I was getting so many comments and I wasn't answering them. Mm. I was just like, I'm not answering comments. Or if there was a comment that would just require too much of my energy, I was like,
exactly. I'm not here to educate you. And please Google.
Right. So, and I wouldn't even say that. I would just be like, I just nothing.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I don't owe anybody anything.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But then there would be other people, other white women who would do that and for me. And that, and that was the first experience I'd had of that. And that was really lovely. That was really kind of,
But yeah, there's such power in the difference between swallowing as a default and then you moved into choice, choosing. To sometimes let things slide, you know what, choose your battles and I'm that person can just then, you know, onwards. I shall just move on. Thank you very much. But other moments where you choose to speak your truth as it does, that discernment is so important to protect yourself, protect your energy.
Exactly. It, for me, it links into my energy.
Yeah.
So it's always about how much, what is that going to do to my energy? How much do I feel like I've got? Where do I want to spend it? What's going to make the most difference whilst maintaining me and my wellness? And yeah, those are all decisions to be made. And it was just such a unique time where, yeah, I just look back on it and it was just such a bizarre, this time last year, we were in the thick of it and it was just, it was mad.
It was extraordinary.
It was crazy.
We were living, I mean, we were, you know, I really had the experience then. We were living through history.
Mm.
Like, you know, it was, we were living through a time that would be talked about and learnt about.
Mm.
It was just, yeah. And yeah, it was a year ago today. We were, you know, we were in the thick of it.
Mm.
And
it's funny because it was like, I think lots of people did learn, and then a year later, in some ways we've had a big cultural shift and in some ways we haven't. It was like a, this peak and then it kind of all just goes away. And
I mean, there was, that was, I don't think we're under any illusion that it would, that the apathy would blanket us again. And you know, I saw these books being bought, these anti-racism books, and I was like, please don't let these just sit in a drawer, not read, not done. It felt like this is the beginning. This we can't unknow, unhear, unsee. And I think, the work has to continue. Happened from the white people.
And it's really interesting as well when it comes to kind of finding your voice. I was helping people to find and use and amplify their voice, and then it took this whole other meaning when I was suddenly in the work as well. I was like, I didn't realize there was another level to this. And I'm in it at the moment, so that was just really interesting. And also that amplifying my voice was very much coming from a place of anger at that point and rage. And it needed to be, but also now, where I am now, it's no longer fueled by anger and rage because that's not sustainable. So it's a much more, I don't know what it's fueled by now. Maybe it's more of a purpose and a vision and an intention, but one that centers my wellness and creativity with it. Whereas before it was just pure anger that was fueling it.
Because a chasm had opened and that enormous wound, like the wounding, the deep, deep wounding that the black community, the black and brown people were just that was just it was it just felt a, for me it felt like just had come to the surface and you know it was right there
and it was right there. And it's funny, I mean I can't speak for everybody, but it felt like that wound has always been there,
of course,
and then it's just other people saw it.
Yeah.
Which was kind of rewounding because it was like, well, for me personally, I had been able to bypass it. Like within our household, we would have conversations and it was very racism very present in our lives.
Yeah.
But also there was a lot of bypassing to be able to survive. And so then suddenly it was like, okay, we can't do that anymore. Yes, that was really interesting. But I often find when people are finding, using and amplifying their voice, it's there's something that clicks it into place. There's something that is like, actually, using my voice becomes more important than me not.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And sometimes that comes from within. And sometimes that's something that happens on the outside. You can no longer not speak out.
Yeah.
And either you're called to it or triggered into it or a combination of, you know, all. And yeah, wow. So what have you, I'm curious now, what have you been doing? What has helped you in healing over the past year? Have you been doing things that have helped you to heal, to settle your nervous system?
I mean, it's been a lot more, what's the word? It's kind of been quieter than any of the other work that I've done before. But it has been around, especially like around September time, a lot of it was about anger. A lot of it was about releasing anger, even knowing what anger is. I've never allowed myself to be angry. I don't want to be the angry black woman trope. There was a fear of my own anger, like an angry Nicola who knows what's gonna happen.
Exactly. It's just like, what if I unleash a terrifying monster?
Exactly. So getting more comfortable with what that is, and integrating that into the wholeness of me has been a part of it. And being more gentle with myself, recognizing the ways, and it has come to me, and this again feels preordained as well, the ways that white supremacy has infiltrated in all manner of ways. So pre-last year, I would have said that it impacted my well-being, it impacted our family, our outcomes, like our history, that kind of thing. But I wouldn't have necessarily seen how it impacted my work ethic. I wouldn't have seen how it impacted so many ways of that I look at the world or believe I could be in the world. And so it's caused me to kind of interrogate that more definitely, and that has been really healing. I have a relationship with rest that I didn't have before, because my relationship with rest is complex.
I love the nap ministry for that.
I adore her.
I adore
the nap bishop is just, and when she talks about rest being reparations and all of that kind of speaks to me. So it's been really lovely because it's been like simple ways of everyday life. There's been healing through that.
On many, many layers. Nicola, what a year. I mean, what an 18 months this has been in the world. What an 18 months this has been for you.
Yeah, it is. It's and it's still, there's still things that I'm kind of reconciling. So for instance, like when an opportunity comes through, it's like, are they asking me because they think I'm good? Or are they asking me because they need a black woman to tick a box, right? So there's all these kind of, there's more opportunities and there's more things being talked about. And it also comes with with stuff.
Yeah, new stuff.
With new stuff.
With new stuff now. More opportunities for lessons to learn and healing to be done.
So
it's early days. It's early days as well. You know, yes, 18 months, well, a year since, well, just over a year since, you know, the murder of George Floyd. And that, I always think of that day of the black squares on Instagram. And I really used it as a day to ask myself, what have you done as a white person in that year since you put up that black square as like a symbol of, you know, so many people put that up with promises to what they were going to do. And I really used it as a day to look back and go, what have I done? And what work do I need to lean into? And interestingly, finding my voice is around talking to other white people about doing anti-racism work and doing it in a way that doesn't come across as self-righteous, because I have not managed that. And Nova said to me, I think that means you need to get back into the course, as I keep saying, and do it again. Because the self-righteousness is all part and parcel of that superiority, which comes from the white superiority. So, I'm getting back into it, yeah.
Yeah, and I think the work never ever ends.
No.
Like to sound like, yeah, but it's true.
It does. I'm right at the beginning. It's layer after layer after layer after layer. You know, so we have
what
to
came up for you when you reflected on the Black Square anniversary?
It was, for me, it was the I did reflect on actually, I mean, just how life-changing the work with Nova has been and how grateful I was to have done it. This part I didn't reflect on at the time, but how grateful I was to have done it before you know, everything happened. And really how much it has, I feel it. Being able to have conversations like this, I could not have done it before. I couldn't have. And I wasn't, you know, a safe space for black and brown people to speak to me openly about their experience, because I know I would have done stuff like, yeah, but, you know, also, yeah, but I also,
yeah, but,
oh, but I'm sure they didn't mean it like that. Yeah, I've come, you know, that sort of the denial thing. And, you know, realizing now what the damage that does. But I think the piece for me to go forward is definitely, as a white person, how do I inspire, engage, like get other white people on board to actively do anti-racism work who aren't currently doing it, and how to have those conversations where, yeah, I don't come across as self-righteous and telling them they should do it because they're bad and wrong, which that's my learning. That's where I got it. So there's also I talk about this on Nova's podcast about how the racism in me, I call her Mildred, with no disrespect to people who are called Mildred or have someone they love called Mildred, but that's what she's called. And I, you know, picture her. And so I notice when Mildred pipes up, I'm like, all right, Mildred, got something to say, have you? And sometimes it's so ridiculous, I just eye roll. But more often than not, I'm like, right, need to go and journal on it. You know, that's what Nova's taught me. It's the self-interrogation, the self-inquiry. Actually, I'll call it self-inquiry because interrogation can have a bit of a scary, aggressive spotlight. Self-inquiry. And at the moment I will ask myself, what was going on then? The stuff, the gunk that comes up. And then it's, there it is. And that's how you bring it up into the surface, and that's how you release it. And I definitely, I will for sure, each time you go into a new layer, I shame spiral at some point. Like, you know, that the shame spiral happens, but happens less and less and for a shorter period of time. And it's just the shame getting stuck in it isn't like beating my self-flagellation. It's not make, you know, it's like, okay, this is, you're a product of your society that has, you know, you're a product of our society. And that's why where I come from is that, of course, white people have racism in them. There isn't like, well, some of us do and some of us don't. Let's just start from the point of we all got it in us. And we've all got all sorts of isms and phobias in us because that's the society we're in. And don't waste time pointing, but I find my issue is, I get caught in this, caught up in trying to debate whether that is so. I'm like, can we spend a bit less time debating whether we think Britain has a problem with racism or not and just get to work in healing? Like, oh, so it's that of knowing how to navigate those conversations where I get triggered. And then when I get triggered, I get into self-righteous and then I try and get into the debate and then we're lost. I mean, we're not going to, there we are. We'll go nowhere. And it's a tactic, isn't it? Anyway,
yeah, absolutely.
It's the perfect tactic of white supremacy to maintain its hold of getting us tangled up and
running
debating.
Around in circles.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, for me, it's that I'm not, it's an art form which I have yet to even begin to master. And that's really important to me because that's how we're going to bring about, that's how we're going to bring about change. So, yeah.
I love that you talk about, like, that's the human side of it. Like, the reality is that we're going to have shame cycles and spirals and guilt and all of the stuff. That's the reality of it.
Yeah.
And it's funny, as you were talking about Mildred, there's been part of my journey as well has been recognizing internalized racism.
Yeah.
That I hadn't seen previously as well.
Yeah.
So where I have internalized it, where I may be upholding racism, and colorism has to come into it. I'm a light-skinned black woman, so I know that there's further work for me to do in investigating that further as well. Side by side with how internalized racism shows up in and for me. So yeah,
it's a lifetime of work, and but the healing, I think that's the thing always to focus on. What we get each layer, each step of the way, the increased connection, the increased love. And of course, the other thing is I'm raising a white boy. So then it's who's five at the moment and having those conversations and really clumsy with it. Sometimes it just doesn't go right. It's just like, oh God. And having to be okay with all of that. We're all learning it and really being okay with making mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, having a conversation with my son about racism or in a conversation like now with a black woman and just being, you're going to, you know, have to be, you know, so it is a healing journey.
It's healing, yeah. And finding my voice, using it and amplifying it has been a healing journey and continues to be so, because when you're not using your voice, it's wounding, it's harmful, and that in any capacity, like in life. And so it's a tender journey.
Yes.
Like, especially in my membership, I'll ask them, like, how is your heart today? Right. And various answers will come back. And sometimes it's like, my heart is tender. Like, this work, it's easier to sleepwalk through. Sometimes it's easier not to use your voice. Have a quiet
life. Of course. Oh my God, it's definitely much easier not, well, yeah, it's most of the time it's easier not to.
Yeah, and then when you're able to tune into yourself and your own energy, then you find that it's been exhausting. But yeah. It's not for the faint-hearted.
No.
And
particularly when it's anger. Oof. But it was so important for that anger, you know, particularly during that time. There was a lot of anger expressed, and it was so important.
And it felt really bloody good to get it out. Oh, yeah. I'm not gonna lie.
there's the healing power of conversation, where one person gets to speak their truth, and another person gets to both hold space for that person to speak their truth. But it's so healing to be on the receiving end. Like, it was so powerful and so important to hear you speaking your truth. And I also remember the conversation between you and Tamu and Nova. And for people who don't know who Tamu Thomas and Nova Reid are, also two Black women, and Nova Reid is an anti-racism educator. Tamu Thomas is a somatic healing queen.
Amazing woman. Yeah.
They both are. And yeah. So these three powerful women, but having the conversation, I think I can't remember, was it you recording it? You held yes. it. You invited yes. them in. And you basically took the conversations that you have on WhatsApp privately and brought it. It was, and I think I sent you all messages at the time, and I was like, wow, thank you. Thank you for your generosity, because hearing it, you talking about your experiences as Black women in Britain in a way that you talk about it amongst yourselves, and it was so powerful. I'll include the link to that because, yeah. so good. And that's all part of the healing, you know, and that helps to heal. That shifted something in me. And, you know, it's, yes, so much of it, yes, shining a light on my own inner racism, but it's also hearing the lived experience and being invited to listen into those conversations. Mm-hmm. But that the generosity of that as well, the willingness to invite us in as, you know, the listeners that were white, that in itself is also, there's a generosity and a love and a desire for connection and healing within that, amongst, you know, all of us there, Black and white, which is, oh.
Yeah, that conversation was just, because we were just talking, we all talk all the time anyway. And I was like, we need to record. Like, we talk on voice note and I'm like, we need to record this. So I kind of accosted them and made them do it.
And oh, thank you.
One of my favorite conversations to have. It was so, and knowing that it was doing so much for us as individuals, as a collective, to be able to have that conversation that a year ago, 2 years ago, we would never have had in public. We would never have felt safe enough. We would never have been able to have the conversation. Was still happening, but we would never have had that publicly. Yeah. So that meant a lot. Us just being in community with each other, knowing that other Black women would hear it and what it would mean to them to hear that on a public forum, letting them know that they've got permission to do that if they felt like they needed it, or maybe help them feel safer to have it, hear their thoughts reflected back to them via the airwaves. Has so much affirmation and validation in it. And then knowing that other white women would hear it as well and kind of hear that rawness and realness was really special. I need to try and pin them down to do another one. But I loved that conversation. I get so many comments on it to this day, and people that have listened to my podcast, they're like, oh, and that one that you did with Nova and Tamu.
But that is the power when you find your voice and you speak your truth and you share it with others. It helps people to not feel alone when they, like you're saying, other Black women listening to that and hearing their experiences and their truth.
Yeah.
Reflected back. And
that's huge. It's the podcast episode that I would have wanted to listen to last year, and definitely every other year of my 40 years of being. Because we can talk about representation. Like, representation, we know, is just the start, and it's certainly not enough. But even amongst representation, you just see the person.
Mm.
Or you just hear the person, but you're not often hearing the real story.
Yeah.
It's just optics often with representation. So we were taking that to another level of this is us, and actually this is really us.
Yeah.
And I know that when you see it reflected back to you, like as a Black woman, to see that, it's like, oh my gosh, this is the conversation I'm having with my friends that I feel like I can't have in public, or the part of me that I felt like I've had to hide because it's not been acceptable, or I'm going to be judged, or I'll lose clients, or like I still have Black women who won't put their face on their website because they feel like they won't get the bookings for whatever it is that they do.
Yeah.
And I was totally that woman when I very, very first started, my first business 6 years ago. And so then to be able to kind of press play on a podcast and actually hear us saying what you feel and know to be true is just, yeah.
So powerful. Oh, Nicola. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I really mean that. I always love being in your presence. I always love hearing what you have to say. I always learn so much. And it always does feel healing and loving.
I'm so glad. Thank you. And I hope that it just shows anybody that if you are big-hearted, if you are kind of like, I'm not the loudest in the room. I'm not, I'm powerful, but I'm not forceful. Kind of all of those things that I criticized myself in the past for not being, because I thought that couldn't equal power and influence, responsible influence. Actually, you can be just as you are and have all of those kind of make the difference that you want to make, you can make in your own way. Like, yeah, you don't have to be the loudest.
Yeah. So how can people come and work with you? Because so much of this goes into you working with big-hearted creatives who are out in the world creating beautiful soul-led careers and businesses. How can they find you? How can they work with you?
So they can find me on Instagram. That is my main playground, along with my podcast. I'm on my podcast more than I am Instagram these days. And that is at Nicola Ray Wickham. And my podcast is called Dream and Do. And then in terms of working with me, there are two main ways. My membership, which is Root and Rise, and working with me one-to-one as well.
That must be so juicy. Oh, yes. Great. So you go to your website for that.
Yes, which is alifemoreinspired.com.
I will include all of those links in the show notes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nicola, so much. Now let's go and enjoy the sunshine.
Enjoy the sun. Thank you for having me, Selena.
Always such a true pleasure.
You've been listening to the Project Love podcast. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, then come and subscribe on iTunes, and we'll deliver each new episode straight to your device. And we would love it if you would leave us a review to help us spread the love far and wide. And if you can't think of anything to write, then just tap 5 stars and say, best podcast ever. Thank you.